I'd like to thank you for coming out this Sunday afternoon. I'd like to thank those who download these talks as podcasts from iTunes. Invite them to correspond with us at utahchristians@gmail.com. We also like to thank those who have taken the membership class online. Please turn the lights on. Yes. We couldn't do what we do without your help and support. Everything's inspired by the teachings of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, the founder and chair of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We'd like to talk to you about something which some of you have never heard of before, but you'll know something about it in the next few minutes. It's called Krishna Shakti. I don't even know if there's an English translation for the Sanskrit word Shakti. Potency, energy, veil, protection. One of the things it means is that we're more than the sum of our parts. Some of us have talent, some of us have good looks, some of us have personality, abilities, genes, intellect. There are those of us who are coordinated, we have good mental powers. But beyond those, if you add up all those different parts, it still doesn't add up to the whole. It still doesn't explain the person. There's something indefinable and immeasurable about us. And especially if you're someone who puts God in the center and you line yourself up with God's purposes in the world, there's going to be something that makes you stand out. Something that you can't necessarily put your finger on, something that science can't explain, but it makes one special, it gives one an advantage. It's God breathing into you. We are called Atma in Sanskrit, which means soul, individual soul. And the Supreme is called Paramatma, which means the Supreme Soul. What's understood by this is that we're qualitatively equal to God. He's Satchitananda, He's full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. And we're also constitutionally full of knowledge, bliss, and eternity. But the difference is that He's infinite and we're infinitesimal. But it can be said that we are particles of God, or we're little samples of God. Just like a particle of sunshine has light and heat, the sun globe has light and heat. Of course, you can't get a sunburn from a particle of sunshine, but nevertheless, they're qualitatively the same. So there's something about us, something embedded within us that makes us potentially stand out, draws opportunity to us, makes the right people cross our path, causes us to overcome obstacles. And in Sanskrit, that's called Shakti. Most of us, unfortunately, instead of focusing on the spiritual soul which animates and illuminates and drives us, we too much focus and identify with what's called God's inferior energy. Earth, air, fire, water, mind, intelligence, and false ego are the inferior, temporary, changing, mutable energies of the Lord. And if you choose too much to identify with matter, calling oneself black or white or Christian or Hindu or Muslim or Jew or 6 feet tall or 5 feet tall or 340 pounds or 90 pounds, then one is dragged down basically by that which one meditates upon, which is dark and inanimate and dull and not full of bliss and knowledge. On the other hand, if we go towards self-realization, if we orient ourselves towards the Supreme Paramatma from whom we come, we take everything to a higher level. We become endowed with a special, ineffable, indefinable power called Shakti. You might also describe it as a favor factor. Here in the Bhagavad Gita, it said, the Supreme Lord is unlimited, His favor is unlimited, His mercy is unlimited. Therefore, the mercy of the Supreme Lord upon His pure devotees is unlimited. It's the blessings of God, something that you can't exactly put your finger on, but it's not just your talent, it's not just your ability, it's not just your work ethic or your education. In fact, more than that, it's the Almighty God breathing in your direction. Most of us have points in our lives when we look back and we wonder, how did I get here? How did I marry this beautiful, beautiful wife? How did I get that position? How did I pass that test? I was thinking that when the Lama Fest came around, 5 years ago in July, just prior to the Lama Fest, I had a melanoma mole on my head. And I went in and the dermatologist immediately scheduled surgery for me. They described it as a stage 4 melanoma cancer. And they cut me and they took the mole, and they also, their procedure is to take the two closest lymph nodes, called sentinel nodes, to see if the cancer has spread, and they do a biopsy on that. So they did the surgery on Wednesday. Friday, I'm in the doctor's office. He walks in the room and he says, I do not have good news for you. Well, that was 5 years ago. And probably if you'd asked the doctor then, he wouldn't have rated much my chances for being standing today. Or if you looked at the medical report, it probably wouldn't have looked hopeful. But here I am standing upright. Of course, almost everyone I meet at the age of 65, almost everybody I meet says, "How's your health, Drew?" And I'm thinking, well, as far as I know, it's okay, unless you know something I don't know. You know, stop asking that question, you know. It's getting on my nerves. We also reached a point in June where we celebrated the 11th anniversary of the opening of this temple. Now, let me ask you something. How do you build a world-class Rajasthani-style temple in an area that's 90% Mormon? Can't be done, right? I mean, on paper, it simply can't be done. Now, we worked hard. I sold cookies for 24 years. We sold llamas when llamas were getting a good price. Dr. Dinesh Patel and his wife Kalpana were a huge part of it. They donated most generously, and they encouraged the members of the Indian community to donate. But even if you take all that together, you take this part and this part and this part and this part, it still doesn't explain how a world-class temple comes to be built in Spanish Fork, Utah. You have to add into the equation the gracious hand of God. You have to add into the equation His favor and His goodness showing up in our lives. It's not just a lucky break. It's not just good fortune. It's something above and beyond that. Our victories of the past are not our own doing, but they're because Krishna or God favored us. He smiled in our direction. At the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna was plunged into despair, plunged into confusion. He had to face probably the most confusing ethical dilemma that anybody's ever had to face in the history of the world. And he had no clue. He thought, if I go this way, it'll be a disaster. If I go this way, it'll be a disaster. I do not know a way. And he turns to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who's driving his chariot. And all the while that Arjuna has been brooding, he's been paralyzed, he's literally on the verge of tears, he's dropped his bow, Krishna has been smiling. And he turns to Krishna at the end of his rope, in over his head, and there's Krishna smiling. That smile of God is the aspiration of yogis and transcendentalists. That smile of favor is the ultimate ambition of every spiritually minded person. That smile, that approving smile of the Lord, that smile of the Lord, at the point you can't find a way, God knows a way. God had already figured it out long in advance. Even before the problem came up, God already had the solution. Because we're limited, we easily get overwhelmed. How many times have you said, there's a cloud covering the sun? Hundreds of times, right? But if you're on the sun planet, if you had that perspective, you'd never say, there's a cloud covering the sun. Sun planet is hundreds of times bigger than the earth. There's no question of a cloud covering the sun. So when you have the perspective of the Lord, then everything becomes prakash. There's no darkness, there's no confusion, there's no paralysis, there's no debilitation. And to get that smile, that smiling favor, that wisdom, that strength, that benevolence, to even passingly glance in your direction is the perfection of all life. Even in kids, you know, when we were kids, 2 or 3 years old, what did we want most in the world? Were we looking for money? Were we looking for our name in the newspaper? Were we looking for a bowling trophy? No, there's only one thing we wanted. Daddy, Daddy, look at me, isn't it? Daddy, Daddy, look at me. Look at me catch the ball. Look at me go down the slide. Look at me jump into the wading pool. And if Dad looked at us and he smiled approvingly and benevolently, we were completely thrilled in every fiber of our being. So Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga is just about taking that same ambition and applying it to the supreme, almighty, omnipotent Lord of millions and millions of universes. Krishna, Krishna, look at me. The so-called disadvantages, you may think, well, my dream is too big. I don't have the resources. I don't have the education. I don't have the background. But if you've got the favor of God, if you've got His gracious goodness hand in your life, then that favor of the Lord will far outweigh any disadvantages. That favor will take you places you could never even dream of going on your own. There's something about us which is indefinable. The spiritual self, which is driving the body, is a part of God described as 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair. And yet it's so minute, it's incredibly powerful. I read a poem by Thomas More. He said, "The sword outwears its sheath." You know, in Japan, they used to make these swords to last for 5,000 years. There'd be 1,000 sheets of paper-thin metal fused together to make these swords. But the sheaths were not so durable. In the lifetime of one of these Japanese samurai swords, there might be 20 or 30 sheaths which it goes through. So the soul is eternal, ever-existing, undying, primeval. And it is the soul, that tiny particle of God, which drives us. Whether you're 90 pounds or whether you're a 340-pound offensive lineman with the NFL, that soul will drive you throughout an entire lifetime. And when death comes, it doesn't mean that the soul has gotten tired or exhausted or diminished. It just means that the soul has used up the body. The body can no longer keep up with the soul. The ligaments, the muscles, the mind, the intelligence, they're just used up. And then the soul accepts another body, just like the sword requires another sheath. This is a way of understanding the transmigration of the soul. It can't be measured. It can't be put on paper. It can't be explained. On paper, we would have never been able to build this temple. Other people can't figure out how we built this temple. All they know is that whatever it took, we got it, right, Dr. Patel? Whatever it took, we don't even know what it was, but we got it because the temple is here as a living testimony for the favor of God, you know? All they know is that when you're God-centered, when you're working for God, there's something about you that people like. When you're working with God in the center, there's something that attracts other people to you. When you're working for God, there's something that causes you to succeed. I had to chuckle when Senator Hatch came, and he was the keynote speaker, and it was Dinesh who brought him here. He had a prepared speech, and he stuck to it mostly, but he went off the script. He ad-libbed for one sentence. He said, "Chiru and Bhai Bhabhi are so," I think the word he used was, "ebullient. You can't help but want to support them." Not our credit, but the favor of God. That we were in line with God's plan to build a wonderful Krishna-conscious temple in Utah Valley. Here it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, "The Lord's facial expression always indicates that He is ready to show favor and benediction to the devotees. For the non-devotees, however, He is silent. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, although He acts equally to everyone because He is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and because all living entities are His sons, He is especially inclined to those who render devotional service. Just as the devotees are always eager to render service unto the Lord is also very eager to bestow benediction upon the pure devotees." Those whose lives are God-centered, and you can be Catholic, you can be Mormon, you can be Muslim. The point is that this is not a sectarian theme. Those whose lives are God-centered have an edge. They have the edge of putting God first place. When you have that edge, you go through life confident. When you have that edge, you go secure. You're not intimidated by the size of the dreams. You know you've got what it takes. The smile of Krishna attracts the right people, opens the right doors, surmounts the right obstacles. It gives you inside information, lets you know things critical to your success. Here's a picture of Prabhupada, the founder of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. He didn't even come to America until he was 70 years old. He had no money. He was in ill health. Now, is that a formula for starting a worldwide spiritual revolution? To wait until you're 70 years old, get on a boat, penniless, and have two heart attacks on the way over, and when you arrive, you don't know anyone there. Now, on paper, can anyone do that? Is that doable? Is that explainable? And yet he had amazing success. How do you explain it? I don't know. The favor of God? Many times there are people with less talent, less experience, people who are more youthful who are sitting on the sidelines, while those who have less experience, did I say less talent? I say more talent, more experience, more expertise. They're sitting on the sidelines, while those with less talent and less expertise but more favor are out in the field making the touchdowns. I don't know how much you know about the Bhagavad Gita, but the bad guy, Duryodhana, was lined up against Krishna and Arjuna and the Pandavas. And on paper, He couldn't do anything but win. On paper, Duryodhana had the best warriors. He had Bhishma, he had Dronacharya, he had Karna, he had Ashwatthama, any one of which could have beaten Arjuna on a good day. Not only did he have the experienced veteran warriors, but he had numbers on his side also. It's described that Duryodhana had 17 divisions of soldiers and the Pandavas only had 11. They were outnumbered in a ratio of 3-2. So Duryodhana had to win the battle, right? Right? He had to win the battle, right? Wouldn't you like to go into any battle with those kinds of advantages? But you'd be wrong. Because Arjuna had Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, driving his chariot. Smilingly driving his chariot. And it was Arjuna and his righteous brothers who won the day. To see the favor of God as a dynamic principle in your life, you can't go through life intimidated. You can't think that you're average. You can't wonder, well, why don't I get some of those same breaks? You have to carry yourself like you have favor. You have to think like you have favor. You have to act like you have favor. Talk like you have favor. Dress like you have favor. Prabhupada, a 7-year-old man, came to America in 1965. I was a youth in that time. And we used to wear buttons at that time. Don't trust anyone over 30. Prabhupada was 40 years over 30. And on the other side of our chest, we'd have a button that said, question authority. Prabhupada demanded that his disciples give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. And we did it. We did it. We couldn't wait. Whatever price we had to pay to walk like Prabhupada, to talk like Prabhupada, to carry ourselves like Prabhupada. He was like royalty. He knew that the Almighty Lord was his father and that he had royal blood flowing in his veins. Prabhupada was maybe 5'1 or maybe 5'2. This is almost a life-size statue of his. This is 3/4 life-size. And he was much shorter in stature physically than his hulking, lumbering 20 and 30-year-old American disciples. But they would do anything. They would pay any price without any hesitation if they could walk and talk and carry themselves like him. In fact, one devotee once said, Prabhupada, you walk just like a king. And Prabhupada said, I'm a servant of God. Why do you want to degrade me in that way? You'll find entering into your life a quiet confidence that you have an advantage, you have an edge. The more that we brag about the smiling favor of God, the more that we come to see it, the more that we bring it into evidence. The smiling favor of Krishna is on my life. Let's declare that. There may not even be evidences of favor in your life at the moment. It may seem that there's a situation facing you that's impossible. There's a mountain that's insurmountable. There are deadly enemies that are dedicated to getting you no matter what the cost. But the secret is, don't focus on the problem. Don't think, I don't have the resources, I don't have the connection, I don't have what it takes. Zip that up and start declaring, with Krishna's smiling favor, I'll not only accomplish my dreams, but I'll accomplish them faster than anyone could ever imagine. Someone says, well, how are you going to get well, considering the doctor's point? My answer is, I'm going to get well through the smiling favor of Krishna. Well, how are you going to get out of debt? I've seen your balance sheet. I'm going to get out of debt through the smiling favor of Krishna. How are you going to break that addiction that you've had since high school? I'm going to break that addiction through the smiling favor of Krishna. The more that you brag on his favor, the more it will come to pass. I remember I used to run marathons in the 90s. And in order to keep yourself fit for running marathons, generally you go out on Saturdays and run 20 miles. There are quite a few runners in Spanish Fork. And so one Saturday morning, I was running right out here along Tree Line Road. And there were about 20 runners, maybe 4 or 5 ladies and 15 guys. And this was maybe in 1996. There had been a few articles about our intentions to build a temple. And so some of the, all LDS people, and they were asking me, well, when do you plan on building your temple? And how much is it going to cost? And I said, well, we're going to break ground and start building in 98. And it's going to cost $1.5 million. And then one of the questions that came up, well, how much do you have in the bank right now? I said, $5,000. Now, these were runners. They had good cardiovascular systems and all. But it was almost as if someone just punched them in the solar plexus. And the whole group came to a grinding stop. They said, you said $500,000, didn't you? I said, no. Well, you said $250,000, didn't you? I said, no. I said $5,000. And you know, not only did we build the temple, but we built it in 3 years. We built it much faster than anybody could ever imagine. We started in 98. It opened 3 years later in 2001. And we never lacked funds. We spent that $5,000, and by the time we spent that $5,000, Dr. Dinesh Patel had lined up another $6,000 or $7,000. By the time we spent that, we sold a llama and we got another $5,000. By the time we spent that, I came back from a cookie sale in California with a few thousand dollars, you see? And then we spent that, and then Dr. Patel, he donated another $10,000. And we never had more than like $5,000, $6,000 extra beyond our expenses, but the construction was never slowed down for lack of funds. It went on steadily, and it opened within 3 years. I want to share this story briefly with you of Savitri. Now, we read about Savitri in the Mahabharata, and if anyone had everything lined up against her, it was Savitri. She had every disadvantage that you could possibly imagine, and yet she felt the favor of God on her at all times, and she comported herself with complete confidence in the most stressing, hazardous situations. She fell in love with a young prince named Satyavan. Unfortunately, Narada Muni, a great sage, told her after she was betrothed that Satyavan's chart said that he would die on a certain day 1 year from then. Now, Savitri had been born as the only daughter of her father. Her father had wanted sons and prayed fervently for sons. He didn't get a son. He got a daughter. So she even came into this world under the disappointment of her father. There was a prediction that she would end up doing more good to her family than 100 sons. There was that. So here she is betrothed to a man who only has a year of life. Now, he's good looking, he's got great character, he comes from a royal line, but another negative was that his father had gone blind. And when his father had gone blind, which is Savitri's father-in-law, he'd been kicked out of his kingdom by rivals and sent to live in the forest, eating roots and herbs. This Savitri, this princess born in a royal family, when she went to live with her husband, she had to give up her royal robes, sleeping on silk bed sheets, take on clothes of tree bark and leaves, and go foraging in the forest for roots and herbs. So she lived there for a year, and on the day that her husband was going to die, she hadn't told her in-laws or husband about this. She asked Satyavan if she could go out with him while he was cutting wood. He was puzzled. He said, "Why would you want to go with me? You never leave the ashram." She said, "I want to go and get some exercise and smell the air." So they went out. Later on that afternoon, as he was cutting wood, he became faint. He became dizzy. And he lay down and he put his head on her lap. Now, this is a script of a play that we do on this subject every 4 or 5 years. I adapted it. And I want to just share a little bit with you. Her husband lay down with his head on her lap and he stopped breathing. And he became inert. Now a mist enveloped the area. And a huge, gray-complected man with a mustache, holding a club in one hand and a noose in another hand, emerged from the mist. And Savitri looks at him. She says, "You look superhuman, so I assume you are a god. Who are you and why have you come here?" The respondee, "You are always devoted to your husband and have acquired the merit of performing austerity. That's why I'm even talking to you. I am Yama, the Lord of Death. Your husband's days on earth are over. I am come to take his soul away." And then Savitri says, "But usually only your servants come. Why have you personally arrived?" Yama says, "Because this Satyavan has excellent qualities and bodily beauty, so he is above being carried away by my servants." So he puts his noose around the subtle body of Satyavan. The gross body is lying there. He puts his noose and he begins to drag Satyavan away. Savitri, now, most people, this is your cue to have a pity party. This is your cue to lie down and bawl and say, "Boo-hoo, poor me. Why do I lose my husband? I'll be a widow. Who's going to take care of me after this?" But Savitri has the smiling favor of God in her. She has confidence. So she walks right along with Yamaraj. Yamaraj has never seen this before. He usually leaves him in a puddle of self-pity, you know. So he says, "Savitri, stop and perform your husband's funeral ceremony. You have no more obligations to him. Don't follow me any further." She says, I shall follow my husband wherever you carry him. This is the tradition. The wise say that whoever takes 3 steps with another person makes a friendship with him. Now that we are friends, please hear what I have to say. Even a material, this is a cool head. Even a materially successful person who has no control over his senses acquires no merit. Spiritual merit is made up of true knowledge. The wise say that acquiring spiritual merit is the best of all things. Yama is impressed. He says, O Savitri, I am pleased by your distinctive speech founded on reason. Therefore, except for the life of your husband, ask me any blessing. So Savitri says, he says, my father-in-law is blind. Can you grant that his sight be restored? He says, granted, now go back. But she continues, she's perky, you know, she continues on with him. And then she says something else beautiful and noble, full of character, that impresses him. He says, except for the life of your husband, ask for me a second boon. At this point, she says, my father-in-law lost his kingdom when he got blind. Granted, he may be reinstalled in his throne. Granted, now stop following me. You must be tired. Go back. Savitri says, how can I be tired? I'm with my husband. He's my life and soul. And I'm with you. You know, you're a noble person conversant with the truth. The whole point of life is to associate with sadhus. So this is the elixir. I'm not feeling tired. I'm feeling enlivened. And again, Yamaraj says, your words are so impressive. Ask from me, except for the life of your husband, a third boon. She says, my father was always disappointed because he only got a girl. Could you grant that he have 100 sons, all strong and heroic and long-lived? He says, granted, granted. Now you must go back. You must go back. But Savitri, one more time, she follows, she says some beautiful words. And then finally Yamaraj, he says, I'll give you one more benediction. I'll give you a fourth benediction, and that's it. You're going to have to stop, go back. It's finished, boss, that's it. So except for the life of your husband, ask of me one final benediction. So Savitri says, I would also like to have sons. I would like to have 10 strongs who are strong, who are celebrated, who are generous, who are leaders, who will be successful in life. And then Yamaraj says, granted. Okay, now we're finished. Adios. Goodbye. There's just one small detail that we need to work out before you leave. So what is that? If I'm going to have 10 sons, I need my husband back. So in order to make that boon will be false. And you're a man of truth. You could never have words come out of your mouth that would later on prove untruthful. So in order for your last boon to become true, you're going to have to give me my husband back. So not only did he give her husband back, but he gave her back her husband in a spectacular way. He says, O Savitri, I have freed your husband. He will never experience illness again. He will enjoy prosperity and along with you will live for 400 years. When he performs sacrifices, he will attain great renown. Moreover, he will have 10 sons with you, and all their sons and grandsons will become celebrated monarchs. And your father will also have 10 sons. These sons will look like gods. They will be famous along with their sons and daughters. They will be very, very celebrated. So if anyone started out with more bad breaks, with more opportunities to wallow in pity, it was Savitri, and yet she had the favorable glance of God about her. That's what faith is all about. A lot of people say, well, if things turn around in my favor, then I have faith. But where's the faith? If you can see it before you believe it, then where's the faith? You've got to believe it before you see it. You can't wait to see it before you believe it. It's believing it before you see it that invokes the favor of God. Someone says, true, you know, you don't know my situation. You don't know the mistakes I've made. You don't know what I'm facing. You don't know what my problems are. No, I know that you're right where Savitri was. And the decision that you make right now is going to determine the outcome. Declare favor in the beginning of your troubles. Don't think, as soon as it turns around, then I'll know I have favor. Then I'll thank you. No. What causes Krishna to turn things around is we thank him for his favor even when we don't see any sign of his favor. When it seems like things are going against you, that's not the time to be passive. When you face big challenges, that's not the time to hope that it's all going to work out. In the beginning of the troubles is the time to boldly declare His favor. Lord, thank You for Your favor that will keep my enemies from defeating me. Thank You for Your favor that will find a way, though I don't see a way. I heard about this Moses soul fish. The shark tries to eat this fish and he opens his jaws and the fish ends up inside the jaws of the shark. But God has put a certain protection on this Moses soul fish, that He exudes a certain chemical that even within the open mouth of the shark cannot close its mouth. It, as much as it tries, the shark knows, I've got this soul fish right where I want him, I've got him in my mouth. All I have to do is close my mouth and it'll enjoy a nice snack. Unfortunately, the shark is paralyzed by the emanation from the soul fish. He cannot close his mouth. And the soul fish is not at all bent out of shape by it. He's in there, he's fully confident that the enemy can do nothing against him. He's fully confident that he's favored. He's calling his friends on his cell phone, you know, picking his teeth, cleaning his nails. His blood pressure isn't going up. He's not tense, he's not worried. He's not calling 911. He's just going about his business, cool and calm, knowing that there's something about him, there's some covering on him which prevents his enemies from doing him any harm. All through the day, learn to speak favor over your health. Speak favor over your finances. Speak favor over your family. Thank You, Lord, that Your smiling glance is on me. Friends, if you have this favor factor, it may not be measured. You may not be able to put it on paper. But the bottom line is, you've got what it takes. Now do your part and activate it. In the tough times, don't complain. Thank. When the dream looks too big, don't give up. Thank the Lord for accomplishing your dreams. If you'll do this, you'll stay cool and calm in the midst of adversity. You'll repel even the most dangerous of enemies, and you'll make it back home, back to Godhead, to bask eternally in the smiling favor of the Lord. And if you're inclined to chant with me, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.